expired. Now, apart from these promises and warnings and these prohibitions and these biddings towards certain good, there is also knowledge available about where we came from, the source, the origin, and of course, the day of resurrection. And so these are just some of the things that we learn from the Holy Quran and the different du'as and supplications, and of course, the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt. In the next segment, then we talk about how this knowledge that we have acquired throughout our years upon this earth, how do we inculcate that with our heart and how it is related to ubudiyya. Jalla jalalullah, Jalla
jalalullah. IRIB English Radio. Our website, www.parstoday.com.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Amin Rastani.
But let's say something here, not to take hope away, because I hate it when people take a hope away from our youth especially. If you fall in water, and the water comes above your head by an inch or centimeter, will you drown? Yes, you'll drown. It doesn't matter if 1 centimeter of water is over your head or hundreds of miles of water is above your head. You'll still drown, right? People sometimes take the hope away from our youth. The youth feels like, okay, I did something wrong, so I'm under 1 centimeter of water, I'm going to drown anyway, so why not just, you know, dive in all the way? Now, this is wrong. قُلْ يَا عِبَادِيَ الَّذِينَ أَسْرَفُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ لَا تَقْنَطُوا مِنْ رَحْمَةِ اللَّهِ. I think in every lecture I mentioned this verse. لَا تَقْنَطُوا مِنْ رَحْمَةِ اللَّهِ. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَغْفِرُ الذُّنُوبَ جَمِيعًا. Tell those servants of mine. Allah sounds like a father here. Tell those servants of mine. Surah Zumar, verse 53. Tell those servants of mine who've done wrong to themselves. أَسْرَفُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ. Don't, please don't lose hope in me. When you fall, don't lie down. Get back up. There's 1 centimeter of water on top of your head. Try to swim up again. I'm waiting there to take your hand. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَغْفِرُ الذُّنُوبَ جَمِيعًا. I forgive all sins. Don't lose me. إِنَّ الشِّرْكَ لَظُلْمٌ عَظِيمٌ. Shirk is a very big oppression to yourself, because when you lose him, his hand is not there anymore for you. Who's there to pull you out of the water? You're doing bad to yourself when you have shirk. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts us between good and very bad. But at the same time, He's always helping us in the very bad. If you make a mistake, it's all good. Come back, I'll change the bad thing that you did to good. We have this concept all over the place in Islamic literature. Allah says, don't give up though.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners. In continuation to what we were saying, which was this idea on what we need to do with the knowledge that we acquire over our span of life and how that applies to our heart and in return to our ubudiyya. So we had said in the first session, of course, that we're not talking about all kinds of knowledge because there's a whole bunch of information out there. We live in the information age. But then a level up from information is knowledge. And of course, a level up from knowledge is wisdom. Now, when we're talking about knowledge, we're not necessarily talking about the physical or biological sciences or things like that. As we said in the previous segment, when we're talking about knowledge, we are talking about the knowledge of the Quran, the teachings and the traditions and the ahadith of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, as well as the Ahlul Bayt and the divinely appointed Imams, peace and blessings upon them all, and the knowledge that we acquire from the different supplications and the du'as. So we have established the fact that this is the knowledge that we need to acquire, and this is the knowledge that perhaps we have acquired. Now, what do we do with this knowledge? Here, we must inform our heart of whatever we have understood from this knowledge, right? And for example, if there is some kind of knowledge or perhaps a secret that has been revealed to the individual, then they too must inform their heart, educate their heart. Now, what is interesting here is you might be thinking, well, what does educating the heart have to do with anything? So let's put it in kind of a little bit of an easier form to understand. The mind is the one that apparently acquires this knowledge. So you have all this knowledge in your mind. You know all these things. But when it comes to your heart, that is when you start to believe these things, right? So you teach your heart, you constantly explain to your heart, you constantly educate your heart on that things which have been learned and the knowledge that one has acquired. So for example, I know that the day of resurrection exists, but do I really believe deep down inside where? In my heart? That the day of resurrection exists or does not exist. So at this level, we begin to teach the heart, inform the heart, and educate the heart on all of these different things and all of this knowledge that we have acquired. And finally, very quickly, we talk about how this knowledge which we have acquired is then taught to the heart. The heart then believes in this knowledge that has been acquired. But finally, what does this have to do with our ubudiyah, our servitude, our worship, our obedience to Allah?
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Well, when talking about what exactly is the connection and the relationship of these things with our ubudiyah, we find that, of course, the knowledge that we have acquired is still not put into practice, right? But it is just this knowledge that we have acquired. And then what happens is that the heart is taught and educated and is informed about this knowledge until the heart eventually begins to truly believe. Now, of course, there are different levels of belief as well, different grades, higher levels of belief and lower levels of belief. But regardless, we start to believe in that knowledge that we have acquired. Now, where does ubudiyah come into play? Of course, we can very loosely say that the acquiring of knowledge in itself is ubudiya. Teaching the heart that knowledge which has been acquired is also ubudiya. It is the servitude and obedience and worship to Allah. But what is interesting is once we have acquired the knowledge, then we have belief in this knowledge. This clearly translates into action. Now, this action that one does is where truly the ubudiya comes into play. We believe in the resurrection day, so we start to act as if we believe in the resurrection day. We do good deeds. We refrain from doing evil deeds. We are honest and we are truthful and we give charity and we oppose oppressors. And likewise, we stay away from haram things, or we refrain from backbiting. We refrain from lying or cheating or stealing money from other people and the like. Now, when this becomes a part of our action, this action is a higher level of ubudiyya. It is a higher level of servitude and worship and obedience to Allah, because now we reflect that knowledge of the Quran and the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, peace and blessings upon them. That knowledge has now translated into belief, and that belief has translated into action. It is all a part and various stages of ubudiyya, our servitude, our worship, and our obedience to Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. أحتمي بحما حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير
Cultural news Social news Scientific news Artistic news with delight.
An inflatable building that explores how people would potentially live on Mars has been unveiled in the British city of Bristol. It's a two-story structure with an area of 570 square feet, powered by solar panels. It's designed to cope with temperatures as low as minus 63 degrees Celsius. Although the Martian house will be displayed above ground, its lower level will be fully buried to maximize protection against the harsh environment on Mars. Inside, the top floor features a hydroponic living room filled with decorative plants that feed into a circular wastewater system. A team of experts helped develop the design, taking into consideration the complexity of transporting materials to the Red Planet and what is already there.
So in the gold inflatable structure which you see above you, that's the main living space of the Martian house. It's gold to reflect dangerous solar rays and cosmic radiation, and it's inflatable because it would be filled with a special concrete made of the dust and water that you find on Mars, again to protect you from those dangerous solar and cosmic rays.
The Martian house was envisioned by local artists 7 years ago. The artists also brought together space scientists, architects, that is architects, engineers, designers, and even school children. The space age dwelling explores what a house on Mars could be like and is meant to for research and experiments about the future. The major objective of the project, however, is to provoke questions about living more sustainably with the resources at hand here on Earth. A celebrated Chinese artist integrates his life experiences and the beauty of his homeland using his own distinctive style of traditional painting. Chen Jialing is known for his Chinese ink paintings. Chen brings to life the imaginative richness and culture through his depictions of landscape with every brush of color. He is most famous for breaking traditional painting techniques while staying within the framework of the art form. Chen says one of his favorite subjects is the Jianggong Mountains, especially during certain hours when the sunlight offers its own visual delights.
The composition of this painting is based on the main peak of the Jianggong Mountains, because the main peak is the most majestic and imposing, especially at noon. The sun shines on the trees, forming a contour light involving trees and the large mountains, which is extremely beautiful.
The 85-year-old artist has also used fused traditional landscape painting with modern technology. Though Chen has participated in numerous art exhibitions, but he says his first solo exhibit was held in his 70s, and that's when his career really took off. Chen says he plans to paint as much of his homeland's stunning scenery as possible during his lifetime. If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cakeland, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cakeland after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting darker elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well. Just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre-Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Ershan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Ershan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Ershan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing. An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State. The aircraft, named Alice, took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. And so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge? How much power do you want to be able to draw from it? So again, we're targeting call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time, or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions, while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance costs.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. My dear sisters and brothers from all around the world, I hope you're all doing well. You're here with me for a better life. I am Beta, a medical student that I'm really interested in Islamic topics, especially in ethicals and morals issues. And, you know, I lack knowledge, but I'm here to share my thoughts and my ideas with you. I wish you enjoy it. We're going to go... through our topic of today's episode. And I'm going to start with, some verses of a poem. Let's go. God has a gift, the gift of love, waiting to be unwrapped by each one of us. There is nothing on earth that fills the gap like the love God has for each woman and man. You may strive for wealth or aim for success, even find indulgent ways to seek happiness. All of this provides only a moment of satisfaction. Inside of us is a hunger only God can satisfy. God shows us the meaning and purpose of life, guides us to the eternity, our souls to suffice. So, as you are aware, in the history of human being, there were always a strong desire to strengthen the bond with Allah and to answer the blessing of love He's offering to us. As you saw just in this poem, it was like, okay, as you know, God is so kind towards human beings, and He is always showing His love by our blessings, by different aspects in our lives, that if we are aware of them and if we open our eyes and our ears to this blessing, we would understand the love God is offering to us. But answering to this love that is offered by God to us is somehow something historical in the history of human being. So, as I told you, there were always a strong desire in human beings to, you know, just strengthen the bond with Allah and to answer this blessing. So, and if, you know, I'm going to go straightly to the point, worship is the key word in this topic and in this episode. You know, maybe this thought comes to your mind that apparently there is no relationship between worship and good morals, because we are here to talk about a better life. We are here to talk about ethicals and morals issues for a better life. But actually, there is a profound connection between these two areas. I mean, worship and morals. All right, now I'm going to give you a break. So then we're going to come back and talk about this cliffhanger more and more. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is B10. You're listening to me for a better life. We're talking about the connection between worship and morals in day-to-day life. And I'm going to give you some examples of holy imams' way of living, so that could be more touchable for you and you will understand it clearer and better. And actually, this is my goal of today's episode. So, as I told you, you have to consider the connection and the relationship of prayer to morals. You know what? I'm going to recite a verse of the Holy Quran for you. Ya ayyuhan nas, ubudu rabbakum alladhi khalaqakum walladhina min qablikum la'allakum tattaqun. O mankind, worship your Lord, who created you and those who were before you, so that you may be God-worthy. Surah Baqarah, verse 21st. You know, dear listeners, we're talking about worship and the connection of worship and morals. Worship has been mentioned many times in Holy Quran, and as you see, I just recited one of the verses of Quran, and it was a sign that, you know, one of the command that is recited to the people is worshiping God. So it means that there is a need in your soul, there is something deep in your heart that is asking for this worship, that is asking for an inner peace by means of worship. Worship means to obey, to submit to, you know, serve a being who is in complete control. Human beings have always worshipped. History tells us that people of the past built huge temples and worshipped many different gods. And, you know, in this episode, I'm not going to talk about why people are eager to make something to worship it. You know what? But the thing is, these proofs all show us that there is a strong desire to worship something. something which is superior to us. The soul finds somehow peace in it, and this affects the personality and behavior of the person. Whenever a natural need is not fulfilled and is overlooked or ignored, there is a big impact on human behavior. And here is the connection that I'm going to elaborate more. There is a strong connection between your needs and your behavior. When you have some special needs in yourself that are not answered because of many reasons, it feels like, okay, there is something missing in your personality and you have to fulfill it. And this desire to fulfill your needs will show itself in your behavior. Worship of God is the essential ingredient of inner peace, and inner peace is the root of good morals. Right now, we're going to go for a short break, and then we'll come back. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
We were given so many prizes. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back. This is For a Better Life, and I'm here talking about the connection between worshiping and morals. As I told you, there is a strong bond between these two areas because you are searching for a kind of inner peace for yourself in your life. And when you don't have this inner peace, you cannot behave humanly. There are many categories of worshiping God. So first of all, there are different categories of this worshiping. The first one is merely performing worship in a mechanical way. That, you know, I bet you've experienced this kind of worship in your life, and it is impossible if you just tell me that, okay, I've never experienced such a thing, because you are a human and humans share a lot. The second category of worshiping is worship for show off. I bet you've experienced this so much in your life because, for example, myself, when I was younger at school, we had, you know, just prayers in groups, and it was like, okay, I wanted to be better. I wanted to show off my praying or something like that. The third category is worship with sincerity. It earns reward. Actually, when you worship, it has a special reward, but the thing which is superior to this physical reward is somehow the spiritual aura that you will find through this worship. And the last and the fourth category of worship is worship with divine realization or vijdan. You know, it creates a spiritual aura. The worshiper experiences such pleasure that, cannot obtain it in anything else in the world. It causes one to become more proximate to the Almighty, to the God, and to find herself or himself in an aura that can't be found anywhere else. And also, I want to mention that the worship of the holy imams was from this category, which is a superior level of worshiping. And right now, I'm going to tell you a story from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Imam Ali fasted most of the days and was busy in praying all night long, so much so that the neighbors report hearing 1,000 takbiratul ihram or Allahu Akbar in one night. Many times this condition became so serious that people just, you know, started to think that his soul has departed from him. Try to be sincere, just try to be pure, and just try to worship according to your vijdan. That's all the time we had for today's episode, dear listeners. I wish you enjoy our topic of today, worshiping. And I just leave you in a warm embrace of God. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Karimi. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh, for today's discussion, we want to be concerned with the concept of prevention of the prayer or making null and void the prayers based on Ayah 59 of Surah Maryam. If I want to refer to the English translation, it says, "But they were succeeded by an evil posterity who neglected the prayer and followed their base appetites, so they will soon encounter the reward of perversity." Okay, the most important part and the core, we can say, sentence or phrase in this ayah is neglecting the prayer. What does it mean by neglecting the prayer?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Actually, the word, the Arabic word used in this verse is ada'u salat, which comes from ida'a, and we have also tadri'ah in some of the narrations. The translator has translated it into neglecting, but yes. It's not, I mean...
Nullify can also be a good word.
Yeah, and I mean, ida'a okay. And tadri'ah means to spoil something, yes. To ruin, to damage
yes.
something.
Yes.
So when it comes to this word, there are, let me, before going to the viewpoints of the okay. Interpreters of the Noble Book of Quran, shares some narrations in this regard. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is quoted as saying that this verse is referring, because the verse is talking about a posterity, an evil posterity who succeeded a group. So that righteous group is referring to some of the prophets among the children of Israel, Ben Israel. And this evil posterity who succeeded them, they were bad people in terms of neglecting or spoiling their prayer and following their vain desires. So according to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says that ada'u salat means tarakuha aw akharuha an mawaqitaha. They abandoned the prayer, they didn't say the prayer, or they said the prayer but not on time.
That's right.
I will come to the interpretation okay. of this part. And in another narration, the Holy Prophet is quoted as saying that as long as a Muslim, a human being, is careful about his five or her five daily prayers, Satan is away from him or her. But as soon as he or she does tajjih of the prayer, then it is very likely for him or her to be deceived by the Satan. I will come to this concept, of course.
Okay.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, in his letter to Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, says that, know that, ya Muhammad, kullu shay'un taba'un li salatik. Everything is a follower of your prayer, meaning that man dayya as-salah fa huwa li ghayriha adya. If you neglect the prayer, if you spoil your prayer, then it is more likely for you to spoil other obligations.
That's right.
So
all in all, salat and prayer over here, you know, is the pillar.
Exactly. That's the point that I would like to come to, that according to the narrations, the most important pillar of the religion of Islam is prayer. And that is why, according to some narrations, in qublat qubla ma sawaha, if the prayer is accepted, then other actions are accepted. And I've heard from some of the great scholars of mysticism that if you are, if it is likely for you to commit any kind of sin, okay, that's okay, you may do that, but do not abandon the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Because as long as you are saying your prayer, there is a rope between you and God. You have not cut any relation between you and God.
That's right.
And there is a hope for you to come back and repent. But if you cut this rope, then it's very difficult for the people to come back to
and,
God.
Is it true that upon revealing this verse, this ayah of the Quran, the Holy Prophet said that 60 years after this event, there were some people who come who, for example, spoil the prayer, and it was exactly at the time of Imam al-Hussein or something like that?
There is one narration, as you rightly mentioned, from the Prophet, and this is one of the interpretations mentioned by the Shia scholars about the meaning of this verse, but the concept which is mentioned in this verse is not limited to those people. It can be applied to any person, any person, in any time and era.
Okay.
Now, having said that about the importance of the prayer, and let me just share one more narration in this regard that is very interesting.
Okay.
Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is quoted as saying, "Inna al-'abda idha salla liwaqtaha," when a servant says the prayer on time, وَحَافَذَ عَلَيْهَا اِرْتَفَعَتْ بَيْضَى نَقِيَّةً. The prayer goes up, spiritually speaking, to God, to the heaven, to Malakut, to that spiritual realm, in a white and pure way. And then that prayer says, addressing that person, حَفِظْتَنِي حَفِظَكَ اللَّهِ. You protected me, may God protect you.
Mm-hmm.
But وَإِذَا لَمْ يُصَلِّهَا لِوَقْتِهَا وَلَمْ يُحَافِظْ عَلَيْهَا. But if that person does not stay on time and does not protect the prayer, meaning that does not act upon the etiquette of the prayer, that prayer goes to God, to the heaven, in a black manner, and says, ضَيَّعْتَنِي ضَيَّعَكَ اللَّهِ. You ruined me, may God ruin you. Or you neglected me, may God neglect you. All in all, we have the concept of ida'a or tadjiya of the prayer. As I mentioned, neglecting, ruining, spoiling, these are some of the translations.
That's right.
What is the meaning of that? According to some Shia scholars, based on the narrations, it means not to say the prayer on time. This is one understanding of the prayer. And according to some others, it means not saying the prayer at all.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it seems that...
for example, improper doing of doing the prayer. For example, fast, you know, incomplete fast recitation of the surahs, you know. And
I believe that what we can get from the books of Arabic dictionaries and also the books of interpretation of the Quran, ida'a or tadjih means to destroy the form and order of an action.
Yes.
So if we say the prayer in a way that it doesn't bring about any positive result, it means that we have ruined the prayer. We have neglected the prayer. In some cases, it might be abandoning the prayer altogether.
Yes.
In some cases, as you rightly mentioned, it might be that we say the prayer in a very neglectful manner. We are not aware of what we are saying. In some cases, it might be not saying the prayer on time. So if we say the prayer, if we do not say the prayer, this is for sure the best example of, neglecting the prayer.
That's right.
If we say the prayer, but in a way that it doesn't bring any change in our life, it doesn't bring any spiritual effect in our life, again, it is a form of idahatu salah, spoiling and ruining the prayer.
That's right.
That is why we have different narrations in this regard. According to some, it's been interpreted as abandoning the prayer, and according to others, it is referring to not saying the prayer on time.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
So, if you put together all the narrations, as I mentioned, Ida'atu Salat can be translated as saying the prayer in a way that it doesn't bring any positive result, any positive fruit for our life, for our That's spiritual right. life, or abandoning the prayer altogether.
In a beautiful story, we read that once a person was praying inside the mosque so fast, and Imam Ali alayhi salam witnessed such a scene, and just give him the simile or the metaphor of as if you are pecking like a crow on a seed, okay? Referring to, we can say, how the birds collect the seeds in a fast manner. So do not like be a crow in your prayer or salat.
There are two more important points that I would like to share regarding this verse 59 of chapter Maryam. Mm-hmm. First of all, the verse reads, فَخَلَفَ مِنْ بَعْدِهِمْ خَلْفٌ أَضَاعُوا السَّلَاتِ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants to talk about the fact that this posterity were, an evil posterity. And the point that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is putting emphasis on is the fact that they neglected the prayer. So again, it is showing the importance of prayer, of salat, the fact that I referred to at the beginning of today's session. So the point that these people were an evil posterity is that they neglected the prayer. So again, another point mentioned in this verse regarding the significance of the prayer. And the next point is وَاتَّبَعُوا الشَّهَوَاتِ. So when it comes to this evil posterity, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala refers to two features, neglecting the prayer and following the vain desires. Now, according to some scholars, following the vain desires is a kind of direct consequence of ida'atu salat or neglecting and spoiling the prayers. So as long, as I mentioned before, as long as you are saying your prayers, it's very unlikely for you to follow the vain desires.
That's right.
But if you are among the people who ada'u salat, they neglect the prayer, then it is very likely for you to wattaba'u shahawat, to follow the vain desires. This is also mentioned in the famous verse of inna salata tanha 'anil fahsha'i wal munkar, the fact that the prayer prevents people from doing indecent actions.
That's right.
So again, I refer to the point that I mentioned earlier, that
salat is the gate to every goodness, and leaving salat is the gate to every badness or evil action. That's all right. Thank you much, Sheikh. It was very kind of you. Really enjoyed nice elaboration on spoiling the prayer, especially in the phrase which is part of Ayah 59 of Surah Al-Maryam. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. The another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
Limit and neutralize Hashd al-Sha'bi's activities with full respect. The Washington Institute for Near East Policy made this decision to get rid of Al-Rafidain Alliance in Iraq.
The Dark Room.
Introduction of Washington Institute for Near East Policy. The Washington Institute for Near East Policy is based in Washington, D.C. This institute is a kilometer away from the White House. It is called the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. This institute was established in 1985. Its mission statement says that it seeks to advance American interests in West Asia. Who is Martin Indyk? He's Jewish. He created the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He was the former research assistant in American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. Martin Indyk served as the U.S. ambassador to Israeli regime for two terms, articulated the quote-unquote dual containment strategy for Iran and Iraq.
Israel is getting the benefit of that growing recognition and acceptance in the Arab world, which started with Egypt and the Israel-Egypt peace treaty and has advanced all of this time in which we've been talking about the travails with the Palestinians, the relations with the Arab states grown and developed.
Martin Indyk is a British-born Jew who is now an American citizen. He created the Washington Institute for Near East Policy to serve American interests and policies in West Asia. He is the only non-American to have reached the rank of ambassador. Martin Indyk served as the U.S. ambassador to the Israeli regime for two terms, serving the United States and Israel at the same time. He's a member of the U.S. National Security Council. He received confidence vote from both main U.S. parties, the Republicans and the Democrats. He was also a key member in Camp David Accords. He has dedicated a 40-year effort to paving the way for peace and reconciliation in West Asia, and he makes it as clear as possible that over the past 40 years, he has been absolutely convinced that compromise or peace is possible in West Asia.
For 35 years, I've been essentially devoted my life to trying to achieve a secure peace for Israel.
Martin Indyk introduced the quote-unquote dual containment strategy for Iran and Iraq. He believed in the theory of dual containment during the presidency of Bill Clinton. According to